Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otter. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Ethna Devine-Hines. Ethna Devine-Hines is a CEO, change agent, and business leader with over 30 years' experience in tech companies large and small all around the globe. She's also a former IDC analyst, a marketer, global strategist, and director of transformation. As CEO of Delta Signia in the UK, Ethna is charged with reinventing and transforming the business. In addition, Delta Signia became an employee-owned trust in July 2024, which means that employees own shares in the business that are held for them by the trust. Ethna says that the shift to becoming an EOT presents an interesting dynamic for our company and employees, one that has resonated with some immediately and very strongly, and with others, a slower burning realization of the ownership, seat at the table, and skin in the game that we all have to turn our opportunity into success. She says EOTs won't fit every business or situation, but they are a serious and growing model for creating more democratic, resilient, and people-centered business. Ethna Devine-Hines, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Thank you, Charlotte. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you with us. So you joined Delta Signia as CEO a couple of months after the business became an EOT. They were kind of transitioning at the same time as you. How did things look then, and how do they look just over a year later?
Radically different, I would say. The only thing that stays the same, as people say, is the office and the furniture. Everything else has changed. And it's been a really great journey of fun, actually, not without its challenges. And we're still on it, you know. EOTs don't just spring up legs and get going. They have to be, you have to breathe life into them. So the start of it, obviously, is all of your governance and your structure in terms of, you know, contract signed, trustee oversight set up, trustee company set up. But then it needs to come to life. So, and my first year has been about bringing that to life. So, you know, creating those really important relationships with our trustees, who are the people, the overseers, the people who are there to care about our business and to ensure it's being run with financial and operational rigor for the best of the employees who are the major shareholders. So that's a structure in itself, and it's a, you know, it's a series of communications. So we run that every quarter. We have two external trustees. One is a representative from the legal firm who actually helped establish us and put all of the legal structure in place. And the other is a CEO also of an EOT who has remained the CEO of a company that he founded and ran for probably the same number of years our company is around, about 30 years. And now his employees own the company, which is a really interesting dynamic, but it's working out really well for them. So David and Giles are our external trustees. Robin remains one of our trustees. He's our founder. And then we have employee trustees, Sasha and John, who've been with the company for a good period of time. So that's one element of it, right? Getting that quarterly engagement in place, a comfort level and relationship building between those people so we can exchange very honestly, a feeling for what is employee trustee level concern and what is not. We don't want to be in the minutiae, those discussions. And then a comfort level on actually what is your role as an employee trustee, for example. So our first year, and what is my role as a CEO? Because it's not my meeting. I am there to represent the board of the company, to tell the story to our employee trustees about the performance of the company. So I needed to be advised day one, Ethna, this is not your meeting. This is our meeting. So I said, oh, right, thank you for that. Because that dynamic needs to be set, right? So that was great. And it's great to have the learning from people who have been there and walked in your shoes previously. So Giles, I'm thinking about in that instance, and David, from a legal standpoint, he's able to guide us very specifically on things, decision-making junctures we get to. So year one has been about putting that structure in place from an EOT perspective. Towards the end of the year, we started to think about, okay, we have climbed the first initial steps. What do we now need to do next to get this EOT story more alive in the minds of all of our employees? And we do that, and we have monthly company get-togethers where I take them through, and we showcase different parts of the business, and I take all of the team through the performance of the company, you know, where we are latest in our KPIs and so on. And so for some of our team, that's been a little bit of a change. They're starting to have to look at revenue graphs and profits and so on. And it's not their usual for a software engineer. That's not typically what you're looking at. And there's a bit of orientation with that. And their initial and ongoing reaction might be, I'm a software engineer, I don't need to know this stuff. But actually, as an employee owner, you do. And that's a learning curve. And I'm more than happy to bring all of the team on the learning curve. And we're going to continue to tell the story of our performance. Maybe we keep it lighter from, you know, 1 month to another, but quarterly we'll get into the puts and the takes of our performance. And then, of course, the major piece of an employee ownership trust is our culture. And one of the things about Delta Signia that I loved from the start was the fact that we had a culture code. It had been penned already, the idea of what our culture and our principles and our values should be. But there was an opportunity to make it much more live in the organization. And with becoming an employee ownership trust, that's a perfect time, because an employee ownership trust is about your culture, really at the heart of it. And so year two, we actually joined the Employee Ownership Association, which is in the UK. It supports employee ownership trusts. It's the only place where we can get the kind of, they are the leading knowledge of employee ownership organizations. There we can speak to other employee ownership companies, seek advice from other companies, meet them, see how we can do business together as well, of course, but also trade in terms of knowledge and helping each other. So we joined that association again this year, thinking that it was the right thing to do, and also to invest a little bit in training for our team members who are our trustees, so they know precisely what their role is to be. And that has given, you know, rise to a big focus on our culture this year, and bringing our culture to life more within our organization. So we identify the behaviors we want to see, we celebrate those, and it just becomes part and parcel of how we live day to day. It is already there, but we kind of shine a light on it, and it becomes very much then how we live.
Yeah, a lot of things are coming up for me as you're speaking about the role of the employee-owned trust. One, that amazing leadership possibility for those employee representatives to sit on a board, to get that amazing board level experience, but also that quite deep seated sense of responsibility that they are representing their fellow employees. And, you know, then you talked about the depth and the really purpose driven focus on culture, and that your employee all hands, which many CEOs hold, are so much deeper because you're actually reporting back to your trustees. You're not just giving employees a bunch of information. You're reporting back to people who are essentially invested in the business. So I can see that it makes everything go deeper and it makes everything more real. A question to you as CEO, what has surprised you in the last year about running a business that's also an employee ownership trust?
Well, ownership isn't just a light switch. It's actually a matter of convincing people that they own something. And even when you're told that you own something, until it's brought to life for you, you actually don't start to engage with it. So that's been a process of understanding for me, and then of trying to figure out what were the buttons I needed to press and the balls I needed to start rolling to try and get people to for the penny to drop that they are invested owners. And it's not a light switch, and it'll never be a light switch. It's a process of education, of understanding, but also of experience. So this year was the first year, it was the first year of full EOT performance. One of the things about an EOT is that they always start life in debt because they've just bought themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's normal for an EOT across the board. And the number of years they may be looking at that debt could be 3, 4, 5, 6, depending on what was the value of the organization and how many years it's going to take them to pay that debt down. And so that presents all sorts of, that presents it. You know, a challenge for a company that's trying to pivot and grow and buy its independence. Mm. But then it has little tricks it can do, like in the UK, an employee ownership trust can actually pay bonus to employees at tax-free. So there are little things we can do, not that many, but a few little things we can do that to make keep life interesting and make it a little bit sweet, especially for those those initial challenging years where things are going to be tight naturally. And so little things like that then get the team engaged. You know, I'm quite happy to expose the numbers, the whys and the wherefores, but this is what we're going to do to get us over this little challenging period until we see a bit more in terms of cash flow. And so that kind of awareness and engagement evolves over time because they start to, our team starts to build their knowledge, and with the knowledge builds interest and engagement. And then we have these little milestones which you have to negotiate. You know, there'll be questions, why this, why that, and why not this and why that. And so now we're going into year two and we're kind of focusing on culture, and we'll have the conversation. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? And that we'll give them the story, because it's an important part of us becoming a really, you know, an employee team of owners. So, that's kind of a little bit, I hope I answered your question, Charlotte.
Yeah, I think you did. And I wanted to follow up and say, you know, you were brought on as CEO for several reasons, but one of the reasons is that you have very deep experience as a change agent and as someone who's brought across about transformation in other companies. So does it feel like a twin pressure that you're trying to bring about transformation in the business and run the EOT Trust, or do the two kind of cross over for you?
I think they cross over quite naturally. Of course, you know, starting a venture with a debt position isn't the ideal, but it gives us independence. So in order to get that independence, you know, I'm quite happy to, you know, live with a little bit of cash strapping through the year. And you know, we have a sound business, so there's no there's no real concern there. It's a case of being careful for a few years. Also for me, culture is of massive importance in terms of any kind of company, for employee engagement and productivity. If your employees are happy, then that's going to seep out of the company to everybody else. Customers will feel it, partners will feel it, everybody will feel the vibe. So it actually goes hand in hand that we've got this additional kind of boost to our culture, the fact that we've become employee owned. And so it's further kind of reason for us to double down on our culture, and build the components of culture that I wanted to add in addition to what was already there as the kind of the core culture. There was a culture manifesto, which I said it can't be called a manifesto anymore. That sounds far too government-like. It's our culture code. And then to that, adding additional elements like our community give back. And we already had a social structure there where we would go out and, you know, and spend time together once every 2 months doing something fun. And we have our in-house things, and we're adding now this year. So we added community engagement in addition last year. That's 2 days per year, which we give of ourselves to the community. And then this year we'll add another half day per quarter, where we actually will just double down on our culture for a half day, with a mix of things that we'll do together. That's not work. That's about us being together and making connections across the company between people that maybe wouldn't usually hang out together or gravitate to each other when we're doing other things. So it's very purposeful and of connecting of people.
I love that very strong focus on re-upping the culture every quarter, because I think in some companies, a culture code is written, behaviors are defined, but people forget to focus back and remind. So I think it's lovely that you're doing that. So there are around 2,000 EOTs in the UK, and it's been growing quite rapidly since 2014. The most famous EOT in the UK is John Lewis, which I had heard about and had known that it was employee owned before I even understood that, you know, employee owned trust was a construct. And I recently heard a podcast by the Irish economist David McWilliams, who says that EOTs could be one of the big ideas of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Do you agree? And do you see this as a model for the future?
I do, absolutely. I think people who are involved in employee ownership trusts can become quite passionate about them. I've noticed a trend. I've only a few data points at this time. I will actually join in the Employee Ownership Association annual meeting later this month, and where I hope to meet lots of other EOT-led companies. And I'm sure to find a tribe there, as somebody who started out literally not knowing and being, you know, kind of going in at the deep end and now coming up for air. But if you think about how our world has developed just in really kind of high kind of macro flows of money, and, you know, the trillionaires, the billionaires, and then the poverty that we see on the other end, and this shift of money that continually seems to be going to a small number of people, and this imbalance in our societies across the globe. And that's where I see employee ownership actually starting to play a role, because we start to bring that ownership back into our countries and our communities, where we as people are not serving somebody somewhere, and, you know, profits are going to shareholders who are not seen, who play a completely passive role mostly in the day-to-day running of the business. And that's been the model for so long, part of our, you know, major large corporations. But with employee ownership, we start to see that shift in another direction entirely. Money starts to flow back into the pockets of the people actually putting in the effort. And it, you know, that appeals to me massively. I can see, you know, in terms of just the impact on culture of organizations, engagement of people, you know, performing a role in a company for a period of time, but knowing you've got traction and engagement and ability to influence there, and that shift, hopefully, where we start to stem this imbalance and start to try and shift it back in the other direction. It is kind of lofty and idealistic, and I don't apologize for that. But we have to start somewhere with this. And I do believe that EOTs can be a major, one of the major influencers in trying to kind of harness this imbalance or rebalance, like.
Yeah, I often talk about how do we change the archetype of leadership that we have in our heads. And this is about changing the archetype of business that we have in our heads. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very refreshing from that point of view. So Ethna, let's talk about you now. Tell us about your leadership journey. How did you get to where you are now?
So, you know, well, 30 years of, I would say, hard work and openness to opportunity. That's the key thing, openness to opportunity and taking... grabbing the bull by the horns, finding every opportunity I could, and then rolling with it. So I had no fixed ideas, actually. I knew from early on I wanted... Actually, I was big into psychology as a young one. But that didn't really grab me as... And I was great at communication. Daughter of a journalist. So I went the communication route and ended up actually in the business school, and that actually suited me because I had the psychology piece, organizational behavior, the communications piece, and actually pulling all of that together worked for me quite well, and they're absolutely my strengths. So I went down the business route, and it started as an analyst, as you pointed out at the beginning, and that was great introduction to the world of technology. It was an IT analyst. However, I was writing a lot of material and I didn't really understand my readers. So I decided not to stay there, to go and understand my readers, so the people in technology organizations. And so that's why I went. And that's why I moved into SAP. And I literally took my journey from there. I mean, they were a great early stage employer. I went from IDC, which was a great introduction to the IT world, to SAP, brilliant early stage employer. Joined them in the UK, spent some years in Germany, and then went out to Asia for a couple of years. So as a foundational kind of exposure for a young person, what an amazing experience. I then returned to this side of the planet, settled in Ireland, where I'm natively from, and, you know, wanted to kind of, obviously I had a job and I was in business, but I also wanted to be a wife and a mother, and I had other ambitions for my life beyond doing my job. So I juggled, as you do, for many years, and now I'm, you know, kind of coming out the end of, not that you ever give up your job as a mother, but it becomes less hands-on, right?
Yeah.
So I'm there, and now I'm looking forward to putting more of my energy into what I would say now is my passion. I love my job. I love, you know, driving bringing the vision, driving the strategy, working with my team on those strategic elements, empowering them to be the best they can be. And then this journey of employee ownership has been awesome. So sorry, it was SAP. Then I went to a small startup in the telco industry. That was really interesting for 5 years. That was an Italian, Lebanese, Irish gig. Mm-hmm. What a bunch of, you know, mix of cultures there. Great learning. We were in scale-up mode in telco. And so that was great. Did that for about 5 years as a marketing head of marketing. And then I moved into Dell, where I had lots then again of really great roles that exposed me in lots of different functions. So I was in the finance organization, in operations, in sales, services, software, you know, so a lot of exposure. So from all of those experiences, I've got, you know, hardware, software, global roles, regional roles, lots of functional exposure, lots of multicultural engagement. And so that creates the rich tapestry then. And also improving on education. So I started with my degree, but I did go back and do a diploma in something or other. I can't remember, right? Project management, then my MBA, and then most recently, sustainability. So I've always, when I've had a little gap and thought, I should be adding here, I should be doing something. And so that's just it, you know, taking the opportunities, trying to open the doors for the opportunities. Once they're offered, take them and, you know, kind of drain them dry, and also always improving on skills.
Lovely. And where along those plot points on your journey have you learned the most about leadership?
It's funny, I was reflecting on this recently, probably because you asked me the question in preparation, and it wasn't a single thing, but I remember a lot of roles in Dell, for example, where leading large projects, could be large global projects, let's say, regional global projects. So I'm a project lead, but I'm an individual contributor. So the team doesn't report to me as such. They have their own managers for, you know, HR things. And I remember taking courses, leading without authority. And that used to frustrate me because I had to lead without authority. But actually, that was the training ground. Leading without authority prepares you, I feel, for executive leadership, because you've got the skill then to create the framework and the setting and set the goals and the metrics and drive the people, convince them, have them set up their own vision and mission that supports yours, and get them to come behind you without having any authority over them. It's all about convincing them to follow. And that was the biggest thing that caused me frustration at the time. In hindsight, I see that it was the biggest thing that set me up for success in leadership.
That's so interesting. And what I'm hearing is that those various individual contributor roles taught you how to collaborate, how to bring people along with you, which is, as you say, so valuable now in your role as CEO. Yeah. And what is your leadership style?
The opposite of autocratic. Mm-hmm. And that's probably because it's had to become, my leadership was based on people buying into me and the plan and my ability to set a vision and a mission and the strategy and help with execution. And so I'm far from autocratic because I was never in a position to be, and it's not my style anyway. But that's how I've developed in leadership. So it's very much, you know, engaging with folks and getting them to get on board, and the whole, you know, kind of supporters and detractors thing, and being aware of your detractors and why are they your detractors, and trying to address those things. And it's really, you know, treating everybody as an equal, and respecting the reasons why they have the position they have, and doing the best to show them the advantages for them of going in a certain direction.
Oh, that's so lovely. And I love treating everybody as an equal. I don't always hear all CEOs or many CEOs say that, but it's about respecting each individual as the human that they are.
Right.
And I wanted to ask you, given your global experience, you've worked in so many different geographies, how do you think about diversity? What does diversity bring to an organization like yours?
For me, diversity is diversity of thought, and that comes from different perspectives, different genders, different races, different experiences, different neurodiversity. So it's all of that. It has to be, you know, representative of humanity for me, and having that as much as you possibly can in your organization, because every one of us comes at a subject or a challenge or whatever with a completely different perspective and skill set. And when you see people play together then to solve, everybody bringing the you know, their uniqueness to it, that's where the magic happens with people. So we don't always have the luxury of having that balance across an organization, but where we can, bringing it as much as we can and being open to other ways of thinking, I think. In Delta Signia, one of the claims for our organization is that we're quirky. We are mm-hmm. quirky. Each of us are a little bit quirky and we're proud of it. And I see that diversity within our organization, that diversity of thought, that I actually haven't seen that many places. Maybe because it's a smaller company and less of that corporate feel, but it's a lovely thing. And it's something that I think we're very lucky to be able to live in Delta Signia.
I love the idea of quirkiness. It means that, you know, you're not trying to build a whole bunch of little automatons who all look and behave the same, exactly. But you celebrate the difference in humans, no matter who they are and how they show up.
Yes, exactly.
I really love that. Ethna, you're a year into your CEO journey, and I just wondered how you think about your own reputation.
Yeah, so reputation, you know, it's to build a good reputation takes years and years and years of hard graft, of showing up, of continually delivering, and your own unique sparkle, whatever that is. And it can also be actually destroyed quite quickly if there was the will to do so. And so it's a very fragile thing that has to be protected. The thing about reputation, I guess it's, you know, you build it and people see that. And it's when it's threatened, then it's the people who have understood your power and your motivation and your potential, those ones who retain their belief in you are the ones that, you know, are truly in your corner. I've had this challenge and I've come out the other side. I mean, I'm very, very much of the opinion that the truth will always out. That's clear. And those who have stood in your corner, when things have become difficult, are the ones that you will celebrate in your life for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. It is fragile, but I do think that what's come up for me again and again is leaders who speak and act according to their values, that it's much less likely that their reputation will be threatened. Mm-hmm. Because if you speak out loud what your values are and then you act in accordance.
Yes.
Then you are who you say you are.
Yeah, right.
And then so people don't experience inconsistency around you.
Yeah.
So we talked about how the EOT is sort of changing the archetype of business. And I said my big passion is to change the archetype of leadership that we have in our heads, possibly loud, possibly room owning, possibly male. You know, we celebrate confidence over competence. And I wanted to ask you, it's a question I ask all my guests, what do you think we can do, both collectively and individually, to shift that archetype of leadership and start to accept new kinds, many diverse and different kinds of leadership?
Open our minds. We have to open our minds. I see it. I'm hoping our younger generation isn't as fixed in their mentality of what a leader looks like, but And maybe that's just an evolution of human through the ages, you know. We haven't worked in these kind of organizations and kind of company settings for that long. And when we did, we were just coming out of the industrial era, and the world was pivoted a certain way. Women worked certain jobs and held certain functions in society, and men did other. And so, you know, that's our evolution as people. And so that has had obviously repercussions in the workplaces that you and I would have experienced in our careers, Charlotte. You know, was very male dominated. You know, the typical leader would probably be 40, male, and have a blue suit. I don't know why the blue suit, but it was a thing at the time. and so there weren't kind of people who looked like us in leadership. And that has led to, in our generation, I believe, and maybe just the ones slightly behind us, this perception that a leader needs to look like that. Whereas I think our kids have a different outlook, and I'm really pleased about that. They're much more, it's less tied to a certain archetype. And our challenge, though, is for us now to change our thinking, because we're the ones leading the show still until we hand it over to them, to give space for the people who are actually leaders. You know, if you can positively influence and encourage and set direction and have people follow you, and you can support them with that mission, you're a leader. Whether you're tall, short, fat, slim, black, white, whatever it is, you're a leader, and you should be allowed to take your leadership position.
I love that thought around the generations, because I do think there's a demographic shift that can't be ignored. And I think that our kids are just much more open-minded, yes, and much more fluid. And if I look back to, you know, my mother's generation, all women who worked, they worked really hard, but they were secretaries, mm-hmm, nurses, and teachers. So when I went into the workplace, and probably you as well, I had no example in my family of a woman who'd even entered corporate, let alone had ambition to lead in corporate. But my children now have experienced a mother who was a manager and a leader. So they have that sense that it's normal. Yes. It's perfectly possible. So I do think that the demographics are helping without a doubt. Yeah. Ethna, now we get to the three questions I always ask. Mm-hmm. Give us a book recommendation.
Okay. Well, I have thought about this one too. And I my mother came to mind because she was an avid reader, and she said, oh, it was a rip-roaring read about a book that she would have enjoyed. I don't do rip-roaring reads. I actually struggle with fiction. I love reading for understanding and discovery. And some would say that my chosen topics are a little boring. My current fascinations are spirituality, neurodiversity, and technology. And my book recommendation, so this was a recent one that was just unputdownable, if that's the expression. Many Lives, Many Masters by Brian Weiss. Absolutely loved it. It was a recommendation to me. I picked it up and I literally sat down. I just ate it in one sitting. So that's one. I have a couple of other. Oneness with All by Eckhart Tolle. Mm-hmm. You might know him. He was German.
No, I think I've read one of his books. I'm not sure if I've read that one.
Yeah. And I am now kind of plodding my way through, and I will admit to that. The Art of Happiness in a Troubled World by the Dalai Lama and Howard Cutler. It's really nice, mm-hmm, to get the Dalai Lama's perspective on the human condition and our challenges and the state of our world and how we can still be joyful and so on. So they're my recommendations. I know they're not going to kind of, you're not going to sit down and have a rip roaring read. Actually, you might do with Many Lives, Many Masters. That's really interesting.
Oh, lovely. Thank you so much for these. Now, Ethna, as you know, the purpose for me behind We Need New Leaders, also with this podcast, is to provide space for emerging leaders to own the leadership, just as you said, you know, yeah, you are already a leader. If there's a leader listening who's from a diverse background, diverse identity, underrepresented minority who has ambition to lead, what tips would you give them?
So my gut feeling is to say, be aware, be yourself, and be authentic. I think some folks go into, let's say, the corporate world and start to reshape themselves to fit the required shape that they need to be in the corporate world. And I'm not sure that helps individuals to be the full version of themselves and bring what they're supposed to do in this world. So I would say, be yourself, be aware, be yourself, be authentic. And then if you can figure out what it is that you're supposed to do, then go do that and do that for your life. I know it sounds kind of straightforward, but I think, you know, somebody said to me once, and it was actually in the recent past as opposed to as 2 years ago, don't dim your light for anyone. And I thought, thank you very much for saying that, because there is sometimes a pressure on us as humans to try and fit the box or dim your light so that you're acceptable in the place you are. If that's what you have to do, you're not in the right place. You've got to move.
Yeah. Social conditioning is very tough. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing at Delta Cygnia, celebrating the quirky, is the opposite of that. So yes. I think that's truly lovely. And last question, Ethna, you mentioned joy. What brings you joy?
So I'm at a stage in my life where probably everything brings me joy. It's funny, you know. But the joy of having the health to enjoy. Mm. So preparing a meal for my family, walking my dog, going to the gym, doing the job that I love. That it all brings me joy. You know, I think, you know, it may happen to some people sooner, but when you get a kind of midlife-ish, you see that not everybody is as lucky. You know, some are dealing with long-term illness that actually defines their job and or their life and what they're able to do. And so when you see that close by, you realize that, you know, what you have every day is and it's going to sound a bit, you know, it's called a present for a reason. It's a present. It's a gift. Enjoy it. And I'm kind of there. And I do. Every day brings me joy.
Well, what a lovely, thoughtful answer from a thoughtful leader. Ethna Divine Hands, thank you for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
Thank you, Charlotte. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.